Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's been so much attention paid in the last few days and weeks to the incumbent president. We've almost lost track of his putative opponent in the upcoming election. So it's my privilege to bring you a little update about Donald Trump before he was shot. At the end of the day, Doug Burgum, this is about former President Trump's thinning down the ranks of potential vice presidential running mates. At the end of the day, Doug Burgum, who's the governor of North Dakota, has the central casting look, quote, speaking of Trump, quote, he's very seriously looking at each candidate's hair, unquote, a source with knowledge of Trump's thinking. Quote, again, Doug's got great hair. That's what he demands in his VP, unquote. So for those of you with great hair, I guess there's still time before Monday when the convention opens. Meanwhile, of course, the incumbent president battles against perceptions, projections, predictions, polls, you know what I think of those, and other so-called data in hanging on to his current position. He keeps trying to knock it out of the park, and so far, the park keeps knocking it back. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'm biding my time, 'cause that's the kind of gal I'm. While other folks grow dizzy, I keep busy biding my time. Next year, something's bound to happen. This year, I'll just keep on napping and biding my time, 'cause that's the kind of gal I'm. There's no regretting when I'm setting biding my time. Beginning on Monday, right through Sunday, biding my time.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, this one right here. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the River Seine, you remember it. It's still not safe for swimming on most days due to E. coli. Weeks before the games are set to begin in Paris, the river is still not safe for swimming on most days due to high levels of E. coli bacteria in the water. That's according to official data, and unofficial data has been thrown out. Official testing by the city of Paris shows E. coli levels at the location where the triathlon events are planned to start later this month. Those levels have been above acceptable on the majority of days, 22 out of 30, between June 3 and July 2. This potentially exposes athletes to serious health risks. Authorities say there has been a general improvement in the sand's water quality as weather conditions have improved in recent weeks and are, quote, confident for the Olympics now, unquote. We're having weather that's more consistent with the season, unquote, the deputy mayor of Paris. The quality of the Seine is good, he added. The mayor of Paris told French radio she would swim in the city's river Seine next week, trying to show its suitability for the Olympics despite ongoing cleanliness concerns. Mayor Anne Hidalgo told France Inter Radio the water would be, quote, depolluted, that's for sure, unquote. Official data shows one-off rainfall events can quickly cause E. coli levels to spike again as recently as June 30th following rain the previous day. E. coli levels increased to around 2,000 CFU, colony-forming units, per 100 milliliters at the triathlon location. That's double the level needed for good water quality, according to World Triathlon standards. If E. coli levels are above 1,000 CFU, the swimming leg of the triathlon will have to be canceled. According to World Triathlon competition rules, it'll be a biathlon, unless the organization's medical committee decides the race can go ahead. Ask your doctor. For more than 10,000 Olympic athletes, making it to Paris this summer is a dream come true. Thousands of potential tourists feel otherwise. Delta Airlines says travelers are avoiding the city this summer and booking destinations elsewhere, amounting to a $100 million hit for the airline during an otherwise bustling summer for European travel. CEO of the company told CNBC Delta's third quarter profit and revenue forecast fell short of Wall Street expectations after airlines flooded the market with added flights. Unless you're going to the Olympics, people aren't going to Paris. Very few are, said CEO Ed Bastian. Delta has the most service of any U.S. airline to Paris. Has a joint venture with Air France. July 1st, Air France forecast of revenue hit as much as $195 million in June through August because of the Olympic Games. International markets show a significant avoidance of Paris, the company said. Well, it may not be a tourist attraction, but it's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Oh, one clear deterrent for midsummer travel to Paris. Hotel prices are set to skyrocket. Revenue per available room for upscale hotels in Paris, according to a hotel data firm, will soar as much as 45% this month and August from last year. So, get your reservations now. Now, little news of the godly. A former Iowa priest is asking for sexual abuse charges against him to be dropped. This is in Dubuque. Father Lee O'Reilly is accused of abusing altar boys back in the 1980s when altar boy abuse was good. In Dubuque is where he's accused of doing it. His lawyers argued that the statute of limitations has passed. Authorities say that statute of limitations doesn't apply because Riley moved to Florida before the statute of limitations was up. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. What's next? Why, news of the smart world is next. Isn't that smart?
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
A much vaunted AI chatbot, artificial intelligence chatbot, Custom designed to help students thrive academically and parents navigate the complexities of Los Angeles public schools, well, it's been turned off. The company that created it furloughed the vast majority of its staff. It's from the LA Times. There's an LA Times? The school district said it dropped its dealings with All Here, the company that created Ed, this unshaped chatbot, after, quote, we were notified of their financial collapse, unquote. All Here did not respond to an inquiry. The level of its operation is unclear. The district unplugged the chatbot, for which All Here had been paid, you know, just $3 million. In the middle of June, less than 3 months after unveiling the animated figure as an easy-to-use conversational companion for students and a soon-to-be indispensable guide for parents. Ed is both a chatbot, personified as a happy round sun, and an online platform that attempts to put together in one portal student records, assignments, grades, academic recommendations, and mental health referrals. Yeah, all in one place. Just, you know, for more convenience in hacking. The platform was introduced in March by the superintendent as a historic, one-of-a-kind game changer in education. Alberto Carvalho, the superintendent, said it was a cornerstone of efforts to make school more engaging, up-to-date, individualized, and successful. He spoke of setting the pace for the nation in a new technology, AI. Officials this week emphasized the chatbot's information sources remain available on the Ed platform. Users just have to navigate it through it in a more traditional fashion, using drop boxes and clicking links. Ugh. Information can be found without having to sign in more than once. The district intends to bring back the chatbot. There's no turning them around. It's on hold while officials determine how to proceed. The Ed system has been hailed as all-knowing in terms of district information, as well as fully protective of private information. We'll be hearing more about that, I'm sure. It was a work in progress. The chatbot only answered questions it recognized. Other questions might be met with a response such as, quote, ask your teacher, unquote. All Here worked with the district to expand the chatbot's knowledge base. This work now will have to be continued without the collaboration of the Boston-based company, since it fired almost all its employees. The district did not have an inkling of any problems until June 14th, when the company announced it was virtually shutting down. The district's lack of awareness is a problem, according to Stephen Aguilar, associate director of the USC Center for Generative AI and Society. No relation to Tony Aguilar, who works for the school district. All Here was a media darling in the tech world. But LA Unified School District had the opportunity and responsibility to dig deeper, said the guy at USC. Quote, we can obviously point the finger at companies, especially startups, that are pressured to overpromise and generally underdeliver. Especially in this environment, it's up to cooler heads to prevail and say, well, you're promising me the moon. Let's see if we can even get this plane off the ground before we get out into space. The responsibility rests with the school district, unquote, the guy at USC. All Here had a contract with the district for up to $6 million to see the project over 5 years. It's been paid about half of that. The nation's second largest school system, quote, achieved its goal of developing a product that provided individualized learning pathways for students, regardless of the outcome with All Here, said the statement from the district. The company has dismissed its CEO and said a rep from the company, quote, we did have to furlough the vast majority of our employees due to our current financial situation. Having said that, I am the chief technology officer here at All Here and the architect of Ed, and I've remained on with a very small team primarily to ensure that there are no service interruptions to Ed, and to help support an orderly transition. Unquote. Transition to what? Bill? Gene? Nick? A former senior director of software engineering at the company, who was laid off a couple months ago, raised concerns about the quality of data protection, according to an article in an education news website. He told the site he'd alerted L.A. school district officials that his company's chatbot processed student records in ways that probably ran afoul of the district's data privacy rules and put sensitive information at risk of getting hacked, and that no one ever responded to him. He alleges that prompts containing students' personal information were unnecessarily shared with third-party companies. Moreover, 7 of 8 chatbot requests were processed through overseas servers. Such conduct would violate the contract with the school district. It's a smart world. Now, news of our freedom-loving friend Saudi Arabia, the land of 4,000 princes. Why, those are some of the princes right now. Saudi Arabia has hinted earlier this year that it might sell some European debt holdings if the group of 7 Western countries decided to seize almost $300 billion of Russia's frozen assets. That was a plan to find money to help Ukraine. The kingdom's finance ministries told some G7 counterparts of its opposition to the idea, one person describing it as a veiled threat. The Saudis specifically mentioned debt issued by the French treasury. The G7 has been exploring different options regarding the Russian central bank's funds. The group eventually agreed to tap the profits generated and leave the assets themselves alone, although the U.S. and U.K. pushed for allies to consider bolder moves, including a direct seizure. Those can be painful. Some Euro member nations were against that idea, concerned it could undermine the currency. Saudi Arabia's stance likely influenced the reluctance of those countries, said the people, who asked not to be identified. No such threats were made, according to the Saudi finance ministry. Kingdom's holdings of Euro and French bonds may amount to tens of billions. Probably, according to Bloomberg, aren't big enough to make a major difference if sold off. European officials were still concerned because other countries might have followed Saudi Arabia's lead. One Saudi official said it wasn't the government's style to make such threats. No, it's the government's style to hacksaw its opponents and put their dismembered bodies in suitcases, but that it possibly outlined to G7 members the eventual consequences of any seizures of Russian funds. It was unclear, some people told Bloomberg, if Saudi Arabia acted out of self-interest, fearing a seizure would set a precedent that could be used against other countries in the future, or in solidarity with Russia. Whatever its motive, Saudi Arabia's move underscores its growing clout on the world stage and the G7's difficulty in garnering support from the so-called Global South nations, the ones on the other side of on the wrong side of the equator, for helping Ukraine in the face of Russia's aggression. Thanks, Saudi. Howdy, Saudi.
Pra tocar uma canção assim, para ouvir quando você chegar, pra fazer você gostar de mim, pra fazer você se apaixonar, pra regar as flores no jardim, para ouvir sempre que faz calor, para refrescar um dia azul, tanto faz ser uma canção de amor. Tudo bem,
é bossa, mambo, rock and roll ou samba jazz. Vai saber. Pro silêncio completar o som, pra torcida quando grita gol, pra galera que só quer viver feliz. Pra você que vem dançar no show, pra voltar ao tema no final, pra dizer tudo que eu tinha pra falar. Tocar uma canção assim, parou quando você chegar, pra fazer você gostar de mim, pra fazer você se apaixonar. Pra pegar as flores no jardim, para ouvir sempre que faz calor, para refrescar num dia azul, tanto faz ser uma canção de amor. Tudo bem, não é bossa, mambo, rock and roll ou samba jazz. Vai saber. Silêncio completar o som, pra torcida quando grita gol, pra galera que só quer viver feliz. Pra você que vem dançar no show, pra voltar ao tema no final, pra dizer tudo que eu tinha pra falar. Pra tocar uma canção assim, para ouvir quando você chegar, pra fazer você gostar de mim, pra fazer você se apaixonar. Pra regar as flores no jardim, para ouvir sempre que faz calor, para refrescar num dia azul, tanto faz ser uma canção de amor. Tudo bem, não é bossa, mambo, rock and roll ou samba jazz. Vai saber.
More than delighted to be speaking to the public radio audience for a few moments before I address the United Boilermakers Leadership Conference, where I'll be reminding them that I brought millions or thousands of Boilermaker jobs back to this country. I hear people all the time saying, Joe, are you going to run? And my answer, not in so many words, is I'm running. And it's true. I mean, I can't do the 100 the way I used to, but talking with world leaders isn't exactly sitting in a rocker either, or running the 100. You know, my dad used to say to me, Joe, he called me Joe because, anyway, he'd say, when you get knocked down, you get right back up. I wish he was around now to give me advice, because in this case, I think I knocked myself down. But anyway, I won a bunch of primaries, and there was none of this noise about, can he run? I was running, and everybody in the White House kept their mouths shut, which, when I was talking with world leaders at the NATO conference, they all said they hoped I made it home safely, which was a lot more than they said about my opponent. They didn't say anything about him. NATO Secretary General Trump said the same thing in so many words, and anyway, look, I've got 500 Boilermakers waiting, and they're a great group of people, and the boilers are being made back in this country again for the most part. So thanks for some of your time. I'd like to come back and get the rest of it. But look, if you're not giving to your public radio station, be sure you're giving somewhere. Thanks. And anyway, thanks again.
I put a spell on you. Baby, because you're mine, I hate the things that you do. 'Cause I ain't lying. Don't you know that I ain't lying? I can't stand it, baby. You're always hanging around because of the way you always put me down. I put a spell on you. Oh, baby, because you're mine. Can't stand it, babe.
Santa Monica, this is the show. Now it's time for a little Musk Love.
Looks like Musk Love.
Why does Elon think so highly of the self-driving features, so-called, of Tesla? It's because he gets VIP treatment from the data annotators who constantly review camera footage of thousands of Tesla drivers and teach the vehicle how to behave more like a human driver, like deciding when it's appropriate to use a blinker or identifying a construction cone. Business Insider has learned that these annotators focus their efforts on two high-profile categories of drivers, a select set of VIP drivers, and Tesla CEO Elon Musk. Lucky guy. I know he gets the $56 million this year, but he gets the safe driving. BI, Business Insider, spoke with over a dozen current and former Tesla employees, all but one who spoke on condition of anonymity, who said images and video clips from Musk's Teslas received meticulous scrutiny. Data from high-profile drivers like YouTubers. YouTubers, I said, received VIP treatment in identifying and addressing issues with the full self-driving software. Putting the full in full. Putting the nearly full in full. The result that Tesla's autopilot and FSD, full self-driving software, may better navigate routes taken by Musk and the high-profile drivers, making their rides smoother and more straightforward. This means, experts say, Tesla's resources are being unevenly distributed and could serve as a distraction toward the company's larger mission of truly autonomous driving. If that is their mission, if that be their mission, each Tesla is equipped with 9 cameras. Owners can opt to share video from those cameras to improve Tesla's systems. The annotators label videos where the system worked properly and those instances where it malfunctioned. By IDing issues, the data annotation team can update Tesla's global database with new information to clear up any confusion for other Teslas that encounter the same situation. Put simply, they teach Tesla's AI that the stop sign at First and Main is part of a four-way stop. Analyzing data from Musk's vehicles has been a priority since the program's inception, multiple workers said. 8 workers said they recalled labeling data that they believed was associated with the billionaire. 2 workers said they labeled a route in 2021 that went in and out of the driveway of a mansion in Hillsborough, Northern California, that they later discovered belonged to Musk. Several workers said they spent a significant amount of time labeling routes in and out of Tesla's Austin and Fremont, California factories, as well as the SpaceX office in Hawthorne, California. While the annotators could have been viewing data from other Tesla employees or SpaceX workers, they said the same focus was not given to other factory or office parking lots in California or elsewhere. In addition, one recalled labeling a series of clips from late 2022 and early 2023 that involved Twitter's headquarters in San Francisco. The worker said the team was told to focus on data from areas near the Twitter HQ during the same time period that Musk took control of Twitter. John Bernal, a former autopilot analyst and test driver, and 3 other former workers told Business Insider they were informed that they were working on data from Musk's car and specifically told to treat the clips with care. While workers at the data labeling plants are typically rated on how fast they can annotate the data, Bernal and 2 other workers said they were told to take more time with data from Musk's vehicles, adding the clips would go through an extra round of quality assurance as well. Said one former employee, it seems pretty clear that Elon's experience would be better than anyone else's. He was seeing the software at its best. Another worker said they had some misgivings about the initiative. Quote, "It seemed like we were purposely making his car better to make autopilot look different than it was." Another former employee said, quote, "It felt dishonest." The so-called VIP drivers, who were favored by the annotators, were known inside the company as, quote, "Tesla influencers," unquote. And more must love Elon's overhaul of the Twitter verification system deceives users and violates the European Digital Services Act. That's what the European Commission said this week in an announcement of preliminary findings that could lead to a big financial penalty. The social media platform, now called X, quote, "designs and operates its interface for the verified accounts with the blue check mark in a way that does not correspond to industry practice and deceives users," unquote, the EU regulator. Continuing, quote, "since anyone can subscribe to obtain such a verified status, it negatively affects users' ability to make free and informed decisions about the authenticity of the accounts and the content they interact with. There is evidence of motivated malicious actors abusing the verified account to deceive users," unquote.
We're so sorry.
Well, first of all, in this weekend where the news has gotten kind of solemn, at least for a moment, we turn to something truly silly. This year's Nathan's Famous International Hot Dog Eating Contest has been the source of some controversy. First, Joey Chestnut, the man widely considered the greatest professional eater of all time, was disqualified from participating in the event, an event he had long dominated, because he took on an endorsement deal with a vegan meat company. Now a competitor in this year's contest, held July 4th, is apologizing for raising any questions over the results of the event after accusations that he inflated his score. Nick Wary, who finished 4th, has maintained he didn't cheat, but on Thursday he asked the event's administrator to reduce his score after video was revealed showing him touching another competitor's plates after the competition was over. Quote, "because I did touch another eater's plates, and because this gives the appearance of possibility of impropriety, I have asked," get this, "Major League Eating," capital letters, "to adjust my score down." Major League Eating oversees the event, conducted its own investigation, said it would comply with Wary's request. That kind of relaxes us, doesn't it? Delta Airlines apologized Thursday after an employee used the company's social media account to say they would be terrified if they saw a Delta flight attendant wearing a Palestinian flag pin. The company also announced that starting Monday, the only flag pin flight attendants will be able to wear is that of the United States. Quote, "Delta removed a mistakenly posted comment on X this week because it was not in line with our values and our mission to connect the world," unquote, a Delta spokesperson. The employee who made the comment will no longer handle the airline's social media pages. The team member responsible for the post has been counseled and no longer supports Delta's social channels, said the spokesperson, concluding, quote, "we apologize for the error." Also apologizing this week is RFK Jr. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has privately apologized to a woman who accused him of sexual assault, saying he doesn't remember the alleged incident and that any harm he caused was, quote, "inadvertent," unquote. In a story published last week in Vanity Fair, the woman, Eliza Cooney, described inappropriate behavior and sexual advances from Kennedy when she worked as his family's weekend nanny in the late 1990s, including an incident in which Kennedy approached her from behind and allegedly groped her in a pantry. The most painful place to be groped. Cooney was 23, Kennedy was 45, and married with five children. Quote, I have no memory of this. No, I can't do his voice. I have no memory of this incident, but I apologize sincerely for anything I ever did that made you feel uncomfortable or anything I did or said that offended you or hurt your feelings. Unquote. Kennedy's text message sent to Cooney on July 4th, 2 days after her accusations became public. Quote, I never intended you any harm. If I hurt you, it was inadvertent. I feel badly for doing so. If you feel comfortable, I'd like to tell you this by phone and preferably face to face. I recognize that this might not be possible. I have no agenda for sending this text other than making the most sincere and earnest amends. Kennedy declined to comment on the allegations. Quote, the text message speaks for itself, he said. Face to face, or, you know, from behind. In an interview with the Washington Post, Cooney voiced incredulity that Kennedy would claim not to remember the incident and said she believed his efforts to contact her were meant as damage control rather than as a genuine expression of remorse. Quote, Cooney, on his message, it was disingenuous and arrogant. I'm not sure how somebody has a true apology for something that they don't admit to recalling. I did not get a sense of remorse, unquote. ABC News anchor George Stephanopoulos apologized this week for telling a stranger he doesn't think President Biden can serve another 4 years in office. As you know, Stephanopoulos conducted that closely watched interview of the president last week. TMZ released a video appearing to show a pedestrian on a New York City street asking Stephanopoulos, you think Biden should step down? Stephanopoulos responds, I don't think he can serve 4 more years. Unquote. The clip quickly gained traction on social media. Stephanopoulos issued a statement later that day. Earlier today, I responded to a passerby. I shouldn't have. And finally, a Raleigh, North Carolina woman, her attorney, and her family demanded a public apology this week from Uber after the woman, who was blind, was dropped off at the wrong location and abandoned by her driver. This happened in May. Camille Richardson was trying to go to a Verizon store in Raleigh off of Wake Forest Road to get a new phone. Instead, she was left in an apartment complex more than a mile north of the store. Richardson said she told the Uber driver she wasn't in the right place, but he took off and told her that he had to pick up somebody at the airport. She wants to make sure the driver can't strand another person, is asking that he no longer be allowed to drive for Uber. Let Lyft hire him. Richardson's attorney said she reached out to Uber over the last 2 months, hadn't received a response, but this week Uber provided this response to a local TV news operation. Quote, we apologize for Ms. Richardson's stressful experience. We have investigated this issue, which appears to have been a result of a map error that directed the driver to an incorrect drop-off location, and have addressed the map issue. Our goal is to create a platform that supports people's ability to easily move around their communities. And we're committed to building features and working with experts, to make the Uber platform more accessible, unquote. During the news conference, the attorney for Richardson said she questioned this driver on more than one occasion if he was sure that this was in fact Verizon, and he reassured her multiple times that she was at Verizon. He guided her to a random apartment door, knocked on it, and proceeded to take off running. Uber, your source for drivers who run. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, very quickly, some news of our friend the Atom. the giant fusion reactor known as ITER, I-T-E-R. You know, fusion is supposed to be the answer to nuclear power. It's safe, it's clean, it involves hydrogen. It's not going to turn on until 2034 now, that reactor, 9 years later than currently scheduled, according to a new timeline from the International Organization. This week, according to science.org, energy-producing fusion reactions, the goal of the project, won't come until 2039. I'll see you then. And only in short bursts to satisfy safety concerns of the nuclear regulator in France, where ITER is under construction. Manufacturing faults, the COVID-19 pandemic, and the complexity of a first-of-a-kind machine have all slowed progress, says the director general of ITER. Quote, we want to make up for past delays by starting with a more complete machine, he said. Unquote. With dozens of private fusion companies promising power production on shorter timescales, some say ITER may be obsolete by the time it turns on. It's like we can't wait for this anymore, says a fusion scientist at MIT. By that mid-2030s, that flashbulb moment is coming a bit late, says the founder of General Fusion, one of the startups. ITER must now wait while its members, China, the European Union, India, Japan, South Korea, Russia, and the United States, what a group, consider the plan. The project relies on a donut-shaped reactor, donuts, called a tokamak, in which magnetic fields contain a plasma of hydrogen nuclei hot enough to fuse and release energy. That would be 150 million degrees Celsius, 270 million degrees Fahrenheit, 10 times the temperature of the sun's core. A few meters away, the superconducting magnets in the system must be cooled to 452 degrees Fahrenheit. That's just, as all of you know, a few degrees above absolute zero. Building complex components at sites around the globe, which is part of the multinational thing, caused multiple problems. In 2016, the construction schedule was stretched to 2025. Then in January 2022, the French Nuclear Safety Authority halted construction. Officials of that authority were not convinced by ITER's simulation that workers would be adequately protected from the lethal high-energy neutrons produced in fusion reactions, which also make the reactor itself radioactive. Just made me radioactive talking about it. ASN's construction pause is still in place today. Gilles Perrier, no relation, or maybe a relation. ITER's head of quality and safety says the relationship with the regulator had been difficult. Quote, when you have mistrust relations, you can't build anything. All right, then. Meanwhile, a northwestern Ontario town has formally decided it is willing to become the site of a deep geological repository for Canada's nuclear waste. Nuclear Waste Management Organization plans to select a site this year. It's half over, babe. Where millions of bundles of used nuclear fuel will be placed in a network of underground rooms connected by cavernous tunnels. I'll take the rooms. The process for the $26 billion, that's Canadian dollar, project had already been narrowed down to two sites, Ignace in northern Ontario and another in southern Ontario. The organization said both the local municipality and the First Nation, it would be the Indigenous people in three areas, will have to agree to be willing hosts. Ignace, between Thunder Bay and Camorra, this week became the first of those four communities to make its decision known. Its town council voted in favor of it at a special meeting. Councillor Wayne Minier said he's pleased the town will move forward to possibly host the repository. The current fleet of nuclear reactors in Canada are going to produce about 5.5 million used fuel bundles, 3.2 already in either wet or dry storage on site at nuclear plants. They won't last long there. The Nuclear Waste Management Organization says the current containers of thick concrete walls lined on the outside with a steel plate are designed to last just 50 years. So they're not a long-term solution. The deaths of a dozen federally listed sea turtles found trapped this past spring in a canal that leads to the Brunswick nuclear plant's cooling system intake has prompted a government review on the limit of turtle species that can be unintentionally harmed by the facility's operation. King tides, coupled with high winds, generated increased tidal forces and elevated river flows that damaged screens on a large diversion structure meant to block marine life from entering into the 3-mile-long canal, leads from the Cape Fear River. Series of large turtle blocker panels are in the concrete structure. There are small gaps in the structure, about 2 feet wide, which are covered with protective screens, says the plant's communication manager. It was these screens that were affected by the tidal conditions and river flow. One of the screens broke loose. Enter the turtles. And many power industry experts and environmental activists consider nuclear power an important component in the world's transition to carbon-free energy. Yet Michael Schneider, an independent international analyst on energy and nuclear policy and coordinator, editor, and publisher of the annual World Nuclear Industry Status Report, your WNISR, says, quote, in new capacity terms, the nuclear industry, from what is going on the ground, is totally irrelevant. He prefaced his statement by comparing nuclear power additions to solar power additions in recent years. Quote, let's look at China. China's the only country that's been massively building nuclear power plants over the last 20 years, he says. China connected one reactor to the grid in 2022, 1 gigawatt. In the same year, they connected, and the numbers vary, but over 200 gigawatts of solar alone. Solar power generates more electricity in China than nuclear power since 2022. And of course, wind power, he continues, generates more than nuclear power in China for a decade already. Furthermore, he noted, the disparity has gone, quote, completely unnoticed by the general public or even within the energy professionals in Europe or also in North America. He said the media often gives the impression the nuclear industry is booming. The facts suggest otherwise. Over the past 20 years, 104 reactors were closed down, 102 started up. Almost half, 49 of those new reactors started, were in China. So the balance outside China for nuclear is minus 51. Well, we can all move to China. Clean, cheap, safe, too safe to meter, our friend the atom. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Come on back. We'll have beer. The email address for this program, a chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts and the playlist of the music heard here on at harryshearer.com. Tip of the La Show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The show comes to you from Century of Progress and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.